This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, City Limits, and it's the second Wednesday of the month. Today we normally do energy issues, and we're going to talk to David Spratt, who for a long time, of course, has been involved in energy issues. But because it's the 50th birthday of 3CR this week, last week, people, regular listeners would know that John McPherson, our transport commentator, talked about 50 years of history of transport in Melbourne. And David wants to talk about 3CR itself and some of the early days of 3CR, the role of to show perhaps younger people today that the Zionist lobby has also been, always been very strong, because for a long, long time 3CR, of course, from its outset, has taken up the cause of the Palestinian people and has been opposed by that lobby. So
things change.
Yeah, I'm sure I should have mentioned who we are. That was Anne Maxwell just said something. Then I'm Kevin Healy, but I keep thinking you tell people who we are, but they probably know, and if they don't know, what's it matter? So David's going to talk about that, and we might even discuss some of the early days, the struggles for the 3CR committee, etc. There were some interesting factional struggles in those days, let me tell you, because we've both been around from the outset. So
I'll be very interested to hear.
So
your
there we are. So David's going to talk about that later in the show. But anyway, that's it. Mac, Anne, I always called you Max then.
Max. I'll answer to Max.
Where did it come from? Anyway, Anne Maxwell. A cup of tea, obviously. And
yes.
This is
telling me it's a new one.
It's a new Chinese. Well, it's a Chinese green tea that I've discovered in the last week or so. Yeah, so it's an interesting little tea. Now, you bought the cups and you know what they are. Which one would you like?
I'll go dark, thank you.
The dark, okay, right. Yeah, there you are, dark. And I get the flowers in pink.
Right. Cheers.
Nice. Interesting tea, that one, isn't it? You're pleased to know a few things happening. You told me you went to a sale this week.
My dirty little secrets on air.
Yeah, that's right. But I raised this only because. Give us your. Are you left or right-handed?
I'm left.
Show us your wrist. Watch? No watch. You haven't got a watch.
No, I've got a phone.
You can get a watch.
Oh.
I can snap. You can snap one up. there's a Sydney auction taking place next week, or
I
July 19th.
I need a watch, I guess.
Yep. There's a little Rolex Rainbow Daytona. They reckon will flog. You can pick it up for a mere $500,000 if you want it.
Just a bit of chump change there.
That's right. So isn't that clever? You pay $500,000 to put a watch on your wrist to know the time.
I'll have to let Mandy, the librarian, know about that one. I'm sure she'll be into it.
18-carat gold chronograph with a multicoloured gem set bezel, and it is estimated to sell for more than $500,000. The current record is $450,000 for a Patek Philippe chronograph from 1946. But anyway, this one's going for auction in Sydney. So if you want to step up to Sydney or get on the phone and...
Can you imagine swanning around just waiting for someone to ask you the
or
time?
Or falling over and breaking it.
Yeah, that would be my fear.
I mean, incredible, isn't it? I mean, that much to put that on your wrist and know the time. I can't. They have the Financial Review often has these lift out things with page after page of ultra expensive watches from all these companies, and the prices are just extraordinary.
The aspirationals.
It's just.
How many billionaires do we have in Australia now? I keep hearing it's in the hundreds.
Yeah, well,
it's amazing.
It's growing. It's good, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The economy must be going.
Growth economy.
Yet they can't invest because of what the government's doing.
Poor things.
It's plenty awful, isn't it? Now, this is exciting news. This is almost as exciting, or probably as exciting as the watch.
Okay.
People who went to Australian guests at the wedding of the year, as they're calling it, wedding of the century, they're calling it. Anyway, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce gushed about the event, with one Aussie-born model labelling it as the night of our lives.
Aww.
It must have been beautiful, mustn't it?
Absolutely. You're reading the social pages here, aren't
must
you?
Have been really beautiful. Philip and Liam Hemsworth and his girlfriend, Gabriella Brooks, whom I've never heard of, but anyway, said the night of our lives and described the wedge as a match made in heaven.
Oh, I thought they were going to say fairy tale wedding.
Yes, match made in heaven. And she wore a ring from Tiffany's. It was just beautiful. And they apparently had the tune of Love Story. It's all so lovely, isn't it? A match made in heaven. I guess the divorce will be made in a court somewhere, but anyway.
I was a bit worried then. I thought you were getting a bit sentimental then.
But no, I think it's quite lovely. Quite lovely.
I'm glad
you did. Now, St. Kevin's, as we know, the Christian Brothers are in a bit of trouble over, this is not to be laughed at, but...
No.
I mean, the fact that they've sold lots of their schools for a dollar each to the Edmund Rice Education Australia, which is part of them anyway. You know, it's like BHP having a hire company that it actually runs itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say they haven't got money to pay the people to whom they owe money for abuse, sexual abuse.
They're paying their accountants by the sounds of it.
It's quite dreadful, isn't it?
Mm.
But St. Kevin's, which of course is one of the schools, and a wonderful name, but apart from that it then gets a bit ordinary. St. Kevin's has managed to a bloke, he's a professor actually, Anthony Dixon. He was abused back in the college in 1973, and he was about to go to the 50-year reunion of his, presumably his matric class, or whatever it was called in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And
they've
banned him.
What?
Told him he can't come. Yes, a former St. Kevin College student and sexual abuse survivor has been slapped with a legal letter from the elite school banning him from attending his 50-year reunion. And they make all sorts of excuses why, but, you know, the fact is that he is suing them and they don't like it, obviously. But that's a pretty ordinary little story, I would have thought, treating that way.
Yeah, it doesn't stop, does it?
It doesn't. But there's also a woman called Ayaan Hirst Ali who left Somalia and went to the Netherlands. And she's now become a really right-wing alarmist. And she's warned, she's an author and she writes these right-wing books.
Mm-hmm.
But she spoke at a conference this week, 4,000 delegates to a conference, Alliance for Responsible Citizenship. And it's all about, and she says that Islam is taking over the world and communism's taking over the world, a bit like Donald Trump.
Mm.
The Islamists among us, the communists among us are saying, let's shift all these institutions away from this focus on the individual toward the collective. As a result, to be quite clear, is just going to be where I came from, as she goes on about how she found freedom in the West. And it's all about those, you know, the freedoms that they consider to be freedoms.
Oh, yes.
Freedom of capital to do what it wants to do,
mm-hmm.
erosion of traditional values such as personal responsibility, individual liberty, Western democracy and Christian teaching.
Mm.
Now, from our point of view,
mm-hmm.
Australians at the event included Tony Abbott and Scott Morrison
mm-hmm.
and Barnaby Joyce.
Ooh,
Barnacle
Barnaby.
Was there,
Barnaby,
yes. And Peter Credlin, you know, one of the hacks at Murdoch and
mm-hmm.
Fox, etc.
Mm.
Greg Sheridan from The Australian, another Murdoch hack, and Greg Gulman from the Channel 9 mob, they were all moderators of some of the sessions at the sessions. So isn't that interesting?
Your press being neutral. Yeah.
So they were interesting, but surprised that Murdoch lackeys would be at that sort of conference, isn't it?
I'm shocked.
Yes.
I wonder how much it was a ticket.
Does it say? I'm not sure it does. It might, but it might not either. No, I can't see any price in there, but what's money when you're getting such incredible value for it? Right. Whatever you got. Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Divided Nation wasn't there then.
No, that's right. But of course, a timely warning, by the way, also from Michelle Bulldust.
Oh, my favourite. You've got a name for her now.
She says that unions are, their inflation expectations are too high, that they're basing their wage claims on expectations that are too high, and this is going to stop up inflation no end. Despite the fact that on this morning's news, and I don't know what happened to our own brekkie show this morning, but there was no, so I ended up back on the ABC. There was an item that Australia, the rest of the world, are actually since COVID, workers in the rest of the world have a 5% increase over and above the cost of living. But Australia is the outlier. Oh, wow. We are 5% below.
Wow, that's interesting.
5% below, but apparently that's still too high for Michelle. it's still causing inflation. So,
can you send Michelle that graph, please?
Yeah, we should because, anyway, that's just...
Do you think she can read a graph?
I don't. Well, I'm sure she probably can, but she'd then interpret it some way or other to say that it shows the workers are still greedy because they should be more than that. They should be further behind.
That's right.
And too many of them are working, of course. She says, she keeps saying we haven't got enough unemployed. That's one of the big problems.
Michelle Bullock, Governor of the Reserve Bank, who can adjust interest rates and create more unemployment if she wants to.
That's right. Yeah.
Michelle.
Well done. You've got it under complete control. Why don't you put him with a job?
I should, shouldn't I? Do you think they'd take me on?
Hey, Dan, you can become an economist at the Reserve Bank and work your way up.
If I have 3CR on my resume, they'll take me on.
Go work a charm.
Okay, I'll do that.
Absolute charm.
And then I could afford to buy that watch.
That's right. You could. You could.
I do believe she gets about $1 million a year.
I know. I've now got you. You're looking like you'd love to have that watch, aren't you?
I'm imagining it.
Yeah, there you are. There's a photo of it there. Do you want to have a look at it? I think there's a photo of it in that story.
It runs on a $2 battery, does it? Or you wind them.
I'm not sure where I put it.
Have you lost the picture?
I don't know that newsprint would
do it justice.
It's a lovely watch. I mean, you've got to be fair about all these things. Anyway, there you are. Now, the other problem, though, Michelle wouldn't be too upset about is 6.3 billion a year. You know what 6.3 billion a year represents at the moment?
I do not. What is that? Not the
It represents the loss in retirement savings by bosses not paying super to their workers.
Whoa.
Yeah. More than 28% of workers are underpaid their super, and it adds up, they say, in terms of their savings to $6.3 billion.
That's a form of wage theft.
That is. And, of course, as of last Wednesday... I'm going to pour some more tea. Yeah, how's your tea going?
It's really nice. It's a very earthy one, this one.
Yeah, interesting tea, isn't it? It's different than the other green tea we sometimes get from Vietnam, yeah.
You are listening to City Limits. This is the Tea Report.
This is Tea Report, that's right. This is the Asian Tea Report. We're all sipping tea away. This won't come as a surprise either, I don't think. I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was about to say, wasn't I? Sorry, from Wednesday last week, bosses, of course, now have to pay super with every pay. Like they've always had to pay it quarterly.
Oh, okay.
And they're screaming and yelling because when it's quarterly, they can make interest on it, even if they put it aside, or sometimes they probably don't. But now, under as of last Wednesday, one, they have to pay the new 4.75% increase to the lowest of low paid, which they say is going to cripple and destroy the economy no end.
Mm-hmm.
So by this time this week, maybe capitalism is on its knees. and secondly, they had to they now have to pay weekly or week or fort, whenever your pay is.
Super funds
on payday, you have to have your super paid at the same time.
Fair enough.
And that's that again, they say, is going to cruel them. It's awful.
I can hear the foundations cracking as we speak.
It's going to pieces, isn't it? What's the world coming to? But on the other side of that, there is some hope.
Ah.
Because last week in caucus, Anthony Albanese told caucus, and well, you can read out the line.
It's in
the headline.
Okay. PM warns MPs, Labor is not against wealth.
Yes,
you had to warn them on that one.
Now, did we need to be told? I mean, do we need to be told that Labor is, Labor is not against wealth? Well, did we need to be told?
First of all, they hammer the poor old home investors, and all those investors have lost all their fantastic lucrative real estate.
Exactly.
Who needs to house people? And now they're doing shenanigans with the super. Of course, you'd be very worried.
Well, that's right, because I'll tell you who is worried, the business community, the small business community.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they said, despite him saying we're not against wealth, they've accused him of not listening to small business and waging an assault on aspiration.
Okay.
An assault on aspiration, Nan. I mean, can you think of anything worse?
Well, everyone should own one of those watches. You know how it is.
Good God, assault on aspiration. And the Council of Small Business Organisations Australia Chief Sky Capuzio, what a lovely name, Sky Capuzio, said concerns that the changes to the discretionary trusts, which are used by small business to protect assets and reduce the tax burden, were easily as significant as the small business concern was around the CGT changes. Yes, key concerns include the cost of transitioning from the existing structure, which could be as high as $40,000 for legal and financial costs. So one assumes they need that much to work out how they can keep avoiding tax.
Imagine how much you're saving if you can afford $40,000 for your lawyers to rearrange things.
To rearrange, that's exactly right, yes. It must be true because Angus Taylor said it's not tax reform, it's an assault on aspiration. So he's into it as well. Yes.
They sat around at that conference and said, let's think up a good phrase. How about assault on aspirations?
Yeah, well, they love terms like, it's always a threat to our standing as an overseas, as an investment company. It's going to cool investment. And confidence is a word they often use. It smashes confidence. Now, I think what they assume is they have to be confident they can keep making a killing.
My confidence is shattered because my aspirations have been assaulted.
That's right. So confidence is a big one for the poor dears. Angus also said Labor was trying to punish the way small businesses have been set up for years. What he means is, of course, they're set up to avoid paying any tax. And this is terrible. You're attacking them and maybe forcing them to try and actually pay some tax.
Do you want to hear my opinion about that?
Yeah, go on, give us your opinion.
Probably a little bit against the grain. But as a principle, I would say you tax the things you do not want and you do not tax the things you do want. So if you do want small businesses, you would actually give them tax breaks. And if you don't want fossil fuels, then you'll tax the living daylights out of them.
Yes. Right.
So I kind of have a little bit of sympathy for the small business. They'd get squeezed both ways, but,
But fossil fuels certainly don't overtax them. In fact, we don't tax them at all.
No. They're not listening to me, Kevin.
Well, they claim they pay taxes, but of course they probably get a hell of a lot more back in corporate welfare and all the stuff.
Their lawyers and accountants are much better than these $40,000 ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But also the good news is, though, that people who invested at the start, like Gina, in Elon Musk's SpaceX thing, have seen their profits go through the roof. It's just wonderful.
Unbelievable. Until somebody reads the prospectus. We will get to Mars once we've invented the stuff that gets us to Mars.
I think it's good that they're out there just doing their bit. But on the other hand, poor old Nigel Farage.
Nice.
Yeah, now it's the news this morning. I was going to raise this anyway, but then the news has updated it this morning. He's been attacked, poor man, for taking a few little gifts that he didn't declare. One from a bloke called Christopher Harborne, a crypto entrepreneur and Britain's biggest political donor, who donated $9.6 million Australian to him. And he's a Bitcoin man, apparently. He just forgot to declare it. And there was another bloke called George Cottrell, a convicted fraudster known as Posh George. but he sort of let him live in this place near Buckingham Palace and gave him other things as well. Now, there's a whole lot going on about poor old Nigel getting all these gifts and donations and forgetting to actually declare them. And then one commentator said Farage has been a bit of a Houdini, particularly when it comes to Brexit, which has wrought huge damage to the UK economy, but for which he's largely managed to escape responsibility. That was Tim Bale from Queen Mary University said that. But money grubbing is something else, particularly when a politician claims to be representing the people against the elite. It's going to look a lot like hypocrisy. And in the UK anyway, that's pretty much the worst that anyone in public life can commit. If he's found to have broken the rules, he could potentially lose his seat, triggering a by-election. This morning on the news, Farage has said he intends to resign from his seat and recontest it to let the people decide and prove that he's being treated so badly. You know, this is a terrible attack. He said it's the people versus democracy or some crap he went on about. But then the other parties say, well, we're not going to even contest the seat. That's where it's at. But
Interesting. Do you think he's completely lost the plot? I'm not sure.
Well, who knows? Poor old Nigel, and he's over there. And, Pauline's over there at the moment as well. It's some right-wing conference she's at with Nigel.
Around.
Yeah, with Nigel.
Yeah, taking a leaf out of the Trump book on the crypto bros there.
Oh, dear. And also, of course, we know that... have you been following the KPMG saga?
Oh, I've seen the headlines. Don't know the details.
Yes. It's
Tell.
And EY was in trouble last week as well, of course. So they all get into trouble in turn. They take it in turns, don't they, those groups?
Yeah, they do.
And then they sort of... They say, for 4 weeks we won't even tender for government business, the billions we get out of the government, just to show that we're really, setting ourselves straight again.
They are outstanding citizens, aren't they?
Yes. Well, KPMG, of course, their crime was that with one of their clients, they got information from auditing the client's work and then use that information for their own ends to go and make money.
Never.
And then a whistle blew and they treated him with absolute disdain. Yeah. He says he'd never do it again. He's copped such much. Anyway, but that's where it emanated from, and now they're all having to resign and trying to explain themselves. And then, of course, there were massive attempts to cover up and blame everyone else. So that's where it's all at. And then, they've just been exposed. And EY, of course, got done for breaking into Anthony Albanese's private bank account. It was apparently some junior person they sent out to do it. So they some junior probably paid a pittance,
okay.
but they charge a fortune to the client, no
right,
doubt.
Right.
And the Commonwealth Bank was the client they were doing work for, and this person, the EY person there, decided to break into Albanese's private account and got exposed. Now, this was unfortunately exposed a few days before the midwinter ball last week when all the pollies and the business people get together and have a lovely time.
With their watches.
EY had spent a fortune on one of the big tables. Which gives them access, of course, to government, etc. Given that they were likely to cop a fair bit of opprobrium from the Prime Minister over this, having a few days earlier, the very day before, the CEO of EY discovered that he'd totally forgotten a commitment he had that night, and he just couldn't make it. And he sent a lackey in his stead to sit at the table and cop the opprobrium.
That's why they pay the CEOs the big bucks.
Yes, there you are.
They know how to wriggle out of things.
And they also have auctions all night, so they raise lots of money for charity,
Nice.
Which is great because they're the charities that the government should be spending money on but doesn't.
Yes, that's right.
Because charity...
Shoring up the lack of public spending
I consider charity as simply a band-aid on the capitalist system.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, of course... For those big businesses, giving a few dollars to charity at those balls is a hell of a lot better than paying tax.
You get a good return on your money there.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And it saves paying tax and actually funding those issues in the first place.
Gee, that would have been a real blow to the company because they want to present themselves as, you know, protecting the privacy of all their clients and so on.
Mm. Oh, that's what they say they do, of course. They all have, they're all honest, decent people.
isn't Albanese's bank account public information anyway? I don't know.
Well, probably, but I mean...
able to get in and change the numbers is a bit...
who knows? But anyway, that was those four companies.
A bit awkward at that table that night.
Yeah, that's right. So it was, anyway, the lackey sat there and probably copped it, whatever was going.
Oh, dear.
Gave lots more money to charity to prove they're really a decent company. Well, let's take a break and let's get David Spratt on the line and have a chat about the early days of 3CR.
Let's do it. Was really lovely. That was Galupa by Unipingu that we were listening to, and our friend David Spratt, we don't know where he is.
No, we're having trouble but getting through, but I know there is some sort of Telstra breakdown situation this morning, so maybe that's part
Let's
of the cause.
Let's blame Telstra.
Yeah. It may well be the problem because he was looking forward to coming on today, so I imagine he would have answered the phone. So,
David, if you can hear us, do phone us. Phone us on 03-9419-8377.
Yeah, let's hope he can get through. Maybe it's to do with the phone situation, but anyway, let's hope. I'll just have a little cough now just to make up for the fact that he's not here.
Need some tea.
Now, you'll be pleased to know... we mentioned earlier that people who invested with Elon Musk, of course, have been making a fortune out of rockets that may well or may not get off the ground, but that's another question.
Is this the launch of the company onto the NASDAQ that they had to actually change the rules in order to get his company listed?
Yeah, but he's... But, of course, he wants to go out into space. Having stopped up planet Earth, they want to go out and stop up another planet, so keep... you know, we might as well do the entire
universe. Can you imagine making the Star Trek version of Elon? go forth and extract.
Well, that's, and he wants to even put a, he wants to put some AI stuff up there.
Yes.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
As you do.
As you do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's made a film.
What?
Yes, he's made a film called Citizen Vigilante. hang on.
Okay.
Line one. Right.
Oh, okay, so we've just had news that David's here, but tell us about the Citizen Vigilante.
Oh, well, no, we won't, because it takes a bit of time. We'll not do it
come
next
back
time.
To that
but
one.
Yeah, because it's a great film. It's a great film.
All right, well, let's have a chat now with David Spratt. Good morning, David.
Hi. Sorry I'm late, but Telstra's version of capitalism just collapsed.
Yeah, well, I was blaming Telstra, not you, David, so there you are.
Funny enough, I can't ring another mobile and you can't ring me, but from my mobile I can ring the 3CR landline and get through. So that's a bit of a triumph for old non-AI, non-digital technology, isn't it?
Well, when I heard it this morning, because I only got a landline, I tested my landline and it was working okay. So, yeah, it's purely mobiles that are being affected.
Well, yes, and the whole of the V-Line service, which is out of action.
That's
Victoria
right, yeah.
Today.
Yep, they're, it's progress. Great, isn't it? The technology works well when it works well.
That's right.
Anyway, David, technology, back in the early days of 3CR, we had pretty raw technology. We probably still do to a great degree, but...
well, I think it was analogue, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. But we did want to talk about those early days, and particularly our role with Palestine in those days.
Yep. Well, when you rang me, Karen, and said, let's talk about 50 years of 3CR, I mean, one thing came to mind more than anything else, and that was... an amazing story, which perhaps some listeners know because I know Juliet Fox has written about it, and it's in the 3CR history. But 3CR carried the voice of Palestine and for Palestine from the very beginning. I think the first program was called Palestine Speaks, and it was pretty forthright. And I think from fairly early on, Bill Hartley had his Par Avion program, which was on a Saturday morning, am I correct?
Yeah, 7:30 to 9, it's the...
And he covered a lot of Middle East stuff, and that really riled up the Israeli lobby, who were really monitoring, as was Asia, were monitoring 3CR from the beginning, and... within a year or so of 3CR starting off, there were complaints, and it sort of resulted in 1979, which I remember in particular, when there was a formal process of the Israeli lobby, it was then called the Victorian Jewish Board of Deputies, wrote the Australian Broadcasting Tribunal basically saying this mob shouldn't get their licence renewed. That resulted in a really, I think, pretty wonderful defence campaign by 3CR and people in support of Palestinian rights. And in the end, the Israeli lobby basically withdrew their complaint. So our side won. And, I mean, I think what's interesting about that is that there were a lot of forces against 3CR at that stage. I don't know whether you talked about it, but there was a magazine called The Bulletin, which was the main weekly sort of conservative publication in Australia in the pre-digital age, and they had a wonderful cover with a person at a microphone with their face masked in black, saying 3CR, the voice of terror. It's perhaps on the wall there somewhere still.
That's what I recall, that cover, yeah.
And, you know, there were people like Sam Lipsky writing for people like The Bulletin, The Australian, and a terrible conservative called Michael Barnard for The Age. So at that stage, I mean, Palestine was not getting any sorts of fair go in the media, and to be honest, media understanding of the issue was much poorer than it is now. I mean, 1979 was only 6 years after the 1973 Arab-Israeli War, which resulted in what was called an oil crisis, and some other people might call it an imperial intervention crisis. And so, I mean, Arabs were not flavour of the month at all, because there had been an economic shock, because Arabs decided that they should get a reasonable price for their oil. And there'd been the incident at Munich at the 1972 Olympic Games, where some Israeli athletes were killed. And so, I mean, the Palestine issue was really uphill in Australia. There wasn't a lot of understanding. And Theresa was, you know, one of the few voices that stood up for Palestine. And so I think that incident really, in a way, encapsulates, you know, much of what Theresa has already stood for.
And, of course, we had Ali Kazak, who died last year, but he was active at the time and a close mate of Bill's and Bill Hartley's, and they are regular also on this program, on this station.
Yeah, and, I mean, the Israeli lobby was complaining that, you know, I mean, it's the normal stuff. I mean, it's interesting when you think what we've had in the last couple of years, that, you know, what's reality. I was saying, was anti-Semitic and, you know, offensive. You know, we've seen this playbook very often. And our side really launched a really good response to that, which was based on the evidence. I remember that there was a group set up called Jews Against Zionism and Anti-Semitism, which I think was set up mainly to fight this broadcasting and tribunal case.
And that's right. People like Albert Langer got involved
with
that
stage. Albert Langer and Jamie Stone and Harry Nowicki and Jeff Lazarus. I mean, it was a group of people. But, I mean, it was the first time, I think, there'd been an overtly anti-Zionist Jewish group sort of become public in that way in Australia, though there'd always been those sort of strands in the left and socialist groups. And they brought out... And Albert Langer did a lot of work, and my dear colleague, Franz Timmerman, who worked with Ali Kazak and I, who's no longer with us, did a lot of work because, I mean, these programs have talked about Nazi science collaboration and various things which, you know, sent the Israeli lobby off, and this was all offensive and wrong. There's no historical basis. And a lot of work was put into submissions to the tribunal laying out the evidence for everything that had been said on the station. I mean, line and verse and references and Jewish sources and so on. And I think that really staggered the Israeli lobby, because they thought it would just be a walkthrough, and they withdrew. And the other thing that happened is that Jews Against Zionism and Anti-Semitism, JAZA, also brought out a guy from Israel who was a school teacher. He was a member of the Israeli League for Human and Civil Rights, which had been set up by Israel Shahak, which was really a very steadfast organisation in Israel. And he came out. I remember there was a pretty packed meeting at Collingwood Town Hall with he and some of the JAZA people speaking. So it actually became a means for engagement of audiences on the issue. And the evidence that our side presented was so compelling that the other side basically withdrew their campaign to have 3CR licences withdrawn.
Yeah, I can recall them also sending us nasty letters when Bill used the word apartheid on Par Avion, and they were threatening massive all sorts of things at that time as well, but I think they backed off on that one as well.
Well, we could have got Desmond Tutu to give some evidence outside, perhaps. But, I mean, I think the other thing to be said, at that time, the Arab-Australian, the Palestinian-Australian communities were a sort of a different complexion from now. I mean, a lot of people who were presenting those programs back then were first-generation migrants. Some of them hadn't been in Australia very, very long. I mean, now we have second and third generations and people with a much higher likelihood of having gone to university and having law degrees and so on. And so it was a community who found it more difficult to find their voice than they do now. And that adds to the importance of 3CR's role.
Yeah, I won't go into the detail of it, but even more recently, when I used the term one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, we got a nasty letter saying I should retract on that one.
Isn't that something that Malcolm Fraser said?
Well, probably, but I think I told you yesterday when I visited the refugee camps in Lebanon in about the 1980s or somewhere in about 1980, I think it was, you know, we said, people said they were raising their children because they needed the next generation of freedom fighters. And that was the, you know, a lot of those people were still the first generation from the original NACBA who still had the keys to their doors and literally believed they were going to go home. But yeah.
Well, the Israeli lobby has always objected to things that they have, where they have no basis, in fact. As we know, and we're seeing it again with people like Julian Siegel, the idea that one could criticise the state of Israel is in their mind an act of anti-Semitism. And I think in that case in 1979, it was just that the evidence that was presented by our side, I mean, everything from UN resolutions to what Albert Einstein said and everybody in between, was just so compelling that they didn't actually want to debate that in an open public forum, which is what the tribunal hearings would have been. But, I mean they kept up that sort of campaign in a minor way. I remember, in fact, in the same year, Ali Kazakh started producing a newspaper called Free Palestine that we did for 11 or 12 years. And after the first or second issue, the printers who were up in Shepparton got a phone call from the Israeli lobby saying, you shouldn't be printing this newspaper because you're dealing with terrorists. And tried to shut us down, and the printers told them where to go. But, I mean, this is a well-established pattern.
Well, everyone's a terrorist who suggests there's any problem with Israel, isn't it?
Yes. And, I mean, in fact, I'm sure, I mean, it was Malcolm Fraser, a very conservative Prime Minister of Australia, who was, you know, actually good on South Africa, made the comment that, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter.
Yeah, and of course, in those early days as well, there were massive struggles for control of the committee at 3CR between the various streams of the left. There were some quite fascinating battles going on in those times.
Well, I can remember going to general meetings of 3CR. I think, were we members? Yes, we were all members. Yep. I'm sure you were there too at Collingwood Town Hall, where there were sort of 600 or 700 people in the hall. And a lot of shouting and screaming at each other. And this was because in those days, the organised socialist left, both inside the Labor Party, but more particularly outside, was much stronger. And the dominant faction in the dominant sort of stream in Victoria is probably those who are aligned with the Chinese Communist Party, thinking a mob called the Communist Party of Australia Marxist-Leninist. And at some stage, they had a large internal brawl, partly because, this is sort of esoteric history, but it's interesting that China had adopted this line that the Soviet Union was the greatest threat to humanity. It was called the Three Worlds Theory. It wasn't the United States or imperialism anymore. It was the Soviet Union was the threat. And this caused a large split inside the Communist Party of Australia, Marxist-Leninist, between what were called the blue flags and the red flags. And those two groups basically had a brawl for the control of 3CR, as I remember.
They did, David, that's right. And it was a massive... A lot of people were really caught in the middle of that who were... aligned
to
the
either side.
Yeah, that's right. They were, but also people who had that commitment to Stalinism, and suddenly they were sort of caught between which one do we go with? Yeah.
Yes. Well, you mentioned yesterday the Albania Friendship Society and there were others where people had a particular ideological view, and then a country would change tack as to whether it was going to be allied with China or the Soviet Union. And then I think didn't some programs disappear quickly and people...
Yeah. Hello. Oops.
I think we've lost him.
Yeah,
David, call us back. Call us back on 03-9419-8377.
Yeah. Telstra problem is obviously ongoing. And my microphone, and you may as well, I'll keep talking. Okay, keep chatting away. Well, I can tell you now about that film, if you like, while we wait for David to get back to us.
Back to the vigilantes.
Yeah. The film, I've got to find where I put the thing though. That's the only problem. But it's a great film.
This was something that was financed by Elon Musk.
Elon Musk's film, yeah. It's called Vigilante something or other. It's called Citizen Vigilante, but I'll tell you what the story is.
I think we might have David back.
Oh, got David back,
okay. This is going to be like the cliffhanger.
We're never going to hear this story. David, Telstra intervene yet again, David.
Yeah, well, on behalf of the Telstra Corporation, I apologise for interruptions to transmission.
Yes, and you've always been a great fan of capitalism.
The other thing I was going to say, and this is more recent history, because it is important, that, I mean, struggles in the Middle East have taken many forms, and you know we've seen two lots of wars against Iraq, one in 1991 and one in 2002. And in 2002-3, I was a bit involved in sort of organising some of the rallies, which I, you know, the one on the 15th of February 2003 was probably 150 or 200,000 people, the biggest rally in Victorian history. And
which the Herald Sun forgot to mention next day it even happened.
though, interestingly, because most rallies that weekend, at that time, were going to be on the weekend, this was on the Friday night, and Australia is ahead of Europe and America, it actually made a picture of the rally at Federation Square, actually made the front page of the New York Times with a heading saying, from Melbourne to New York, you know, rallies or whatever. But, I mean, 3CR was really committed to all that sort of work. I mean, there was special programming, you know, live broadcasts from those rallies. And I think really, you know, as it has many times, played a really important role in bringing those movements and that politics to its listeners.
And that rally was so huge. I was at the library area and we said, we're marching. We couldn't march because the head of the march had already got to the other end.
Yes.
It was huge.
It started at the State Library, and a friend of mine shimmied up one of the electricity poles and said, I've got to tell you that Swanston Street is full from here to Flinders Street Station. And in fact, our dear friend Bill Bell, who's no longer with us, was in charge of police liaison on the day, which was an irony in itself. And just as the rally started at 5 o'clock and people were pouring out of the railway station opposite the library, the police rushed up their building in a hurry and said, the railway station's not safe. You've got to stop the rally. And Bill said, well, look, comrade, there's 100,000 people here. I think it's a bit late for that.
No, you should have stood at the corner of Swanson and Flinders and screamed out, stop.
Stop. And in fact, when people said, let's march to Federation Square, I'm told, I didn't see it, the people, because they couldn't march down Flinders Street, around Swanson Street, actually marched down both Russell Street and Elizabeth Street to get to the other end of what was still chaos. But an interesting event. But, you know, 3CR, in those many months of that campaign, as it has in many other mobilisations, you know, played an important role.
Yeah, and you mentioned Albania. I told you the story yesterday, but when the Maoist group did control the 3CR and Enver Hoxha, the autocrat Stalinist who ran Albania, was a close friend of Mao, and there was a daily program called Albania Speaks, which seemed to be on almost all day, in fact, but it you discovered that since the Garden of Eden, paradise had suddenly come back to Earth, and this was paradise on Earth, Albania, apparently. Mm. But then one morning I turned on the radio and they said there'd been a massive fallout between Chairman Mao and Enver Hoxha. So I tuned into 3CR to hear what Albania Speaks had to say about it, but no, Albania Speaks, it just sank without trace. Disappeared off the airwaves altogether.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is the fun part of 3CR.
Yes, it was paradise lost in that case, David.
yes, as it may have been with North Korea as well. But, I mean, it just reflects that the character of progressive politics in those days was very different from today. I mean, because there was and you were in the left of the Labor Party, as I was, a very strong Labor Party. I mean, Jim Cairns had become somewhat oddly a treasurer, had you know, been a leader of the moratorium, and there was a strong Communist Party, the China Line Party, Trotskyist independence. It was a world where socialist politics was very different from today.
And indeed, in those first couple of years of the socialist left, which we formed after federal intervention in 1970, socialism actually meant something in that title, but now it's just totally meaningless.
And I mean, it was, when all things said and done, it was to a large measure those political forces that set up 3CR, the left unions and so on. I mean, if there hadn't been that strength of the left in those days, I don't know whether 3CR would have ever got off the ground.
No, probably, well, it wouldn't have.
And you think I think you worked with Bill on Power Avion at various times that that was responsible by the Food Preservers Union, one of many left unions which got swallowed up in the great Bill Keltie amalgamation period.
The neoliberal takeover of the capitalist economy.
Indeed.
And destruction of the union movement, unfortunately, yeah. Which was a tragedy. David, before we go, because you have been involved so often on environment issues, we're seeing some pretty extreme things going on around the world, but they now seem to be, in fact, normal, don't they?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, unfortunately, this is the frog in the saucepan, isn't it? It gets a bit warm and you adjust and I think particularly in politics, there's an attempt to normalise what are now extraordinary things. And, there was a precursor to this in 2003 where there was an extreme heat wave in France and across parts of Europe in August where everybody had gone to the coast and left their grandparents in Paris in their apartments. And at that time, 70,000 people died, mainly in Paris and other places as well. And people, scientists said, look, in 20 or 30 years, this will become a fairly common occurrence. It was extraordinary then. They said, by 2040, this will happen. These sort of temperatures will happen 1 year and two. And in fact, we've had a really step up in warming, and we've seen these extraordinary events in Europe. And their intensity is not only the heat, but the way it's staying around for so many days is a direct product of climate change. And now, for people who follow the science a little bit, we are heading towards what looks like a record-breaking El Niño, and people will know that El Niños in Australia are associated with drier summers and extreme temperatures because of changes in heat in the Eastern Pacific Ocean. And we look like heading towards a record-breaking El Niño, which has effects here, not only here but in Asia, on there are already some a bit of a food crisis in Papua New Guinea, in India the monsoon has been delayed, which is a classic El Niño sign, and we may be heading for a summer of a food crisis, particularly a rice crisis in our part of the world, because of climate change. So this is, these things were science fiction films in the future a few years ago, and now they've become an everyday reality.
Yes, and yet we've got governments like Trump is cutting out all subsidies to renewables, and even in Canada, Carney has always claimed to be on the side of climate, knowing that climate change is approving all sorts of coal and gas proposals. So.
Well, I mean, in a previous incarnation, he was head of the Bank of England and actually set up a thing called the Network for Greening the Financial System, which was an international sort of central bank initiative to look at climate change, and they said some good things in their time, not great, but better than anybody else. And now he's just flipped. And I mean, I think here, if you look at what's happening, we actually have a Jekyll and Hyde government.
Yep, absolutely. We've got to go, though, unfortunately. David, time's up.
Thank you, Kevin. Well done to everybody. It's been fantastic.
Okay, and look, thank you for your work this morning and coming up with such interesting stuff, David. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Telstra.
Right. Okay, yes.
Thanks, Telstra.
Thanks, Telstra. Okay, and next week, of course, is housing. But in the meantime, Joe Toscano.
Stay with us for Anarchist World this week.
And Anne, thanks for keeping us on air despite Telstra.
We did it, Kevin. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.